It's come to this, Mike. This is our rock bottom.
Yep.
Should I say we're sinking to a new low in honor of the
we're descending into the underworld is what I like to call it. I think that's a more appropriate way to, that's the more symbolic, mythological way to look at it, Jacob.
Time will tell if we can raise again. Can these bones live, Mike? We're going to find out.
I mean,
it's the Voyage Comics podcast clip show, everyone.
What? Is there sound? Should there be music in the background? Oh, yeah, exactly. That's how bad it's gotten. I have to do the sound for it too.
Welcome to the Voyage Podcast, a show that traverses the oceans of myth and legend through the lens of Catholic theology and philosophy. Come aboard as we set sail in pursuit of the heroic life and Christian virtue with your hosts, Mike Schramm and Jacob Platty.
So, you know, what I was jokingly thinking to myself is you'll see this a lot in sitcoms, right? Where after like six seasons, the writers, they want to do some reminiscing, but they also, you know, especially back in the old days when you'd have like 25 episode seasons, they'd have a lot of these throwaway episodes. And you and I have talked about how, you know, more modern television has done a lot in terms of trimming the fat. Mm. Well, this is pre-trimmed fat where we're using, going back into the archives.
Into the archives. I like that.
But you know what I will say? It's better than just doing a straight up repeat, which you will see on a lot of podcasts, is they'll play a quote unquote classic episode. What you've done, my friend, is I appreciate a lot of hard work going back and kind of tying a lot of these clips together around a common theme.
Yeah, it actually was.
Which a lot of our conversations have sort of. So this is not your average, you know, clip show or not your average repeat.
Also, let me just point out, this came about because we didn't have time to like do an episode. And ironically, it turned into a significant amount of more work, and we're still sitting here recording together. And so this podcast didn't air on Tuesday like it was supposed to, because we ended up having to record together anyway. Like,
I think it's just all the time, love, and attention you've put into it is how I see it anyway.
Why didn't we have time to actually record this week? Well, let me tell you, folks, it's because Mike had some kind of big holiday that he was busy with.
Yeah, for half of us, it was the holiest day of the year. Yeah, for the other half, it was
some kind of weird pagan bunny celebration, I hear. But evidently that was more important, and going to church services on his holy week was more important than recording these episodes. And then I think the other reason why you couldn't do it, because you had to go down to Florida for spring break or something like that to get into shenanigans. I mean,
I told you why, right? We finally got the bus for all the kids so we can fit them all. I was doing some
bus down to Florida, right?
I mean, if it becomes a party bus, I'm not going to like, I'll just kind of gradually lean into it. One could argue that a family of seven kids is already a party. Whenever we get in, you know, just when we're going to mass on Sunday, it's a party.
Everywhere you go, it's a party.
One could say confidently. Now that's a different question, but
so
we're going to talk about some clips, Jacob.
We're going to get some clips. All right. So this is our Easter episode. Basically, this year we're going to look at clips that relate to all things theologically, you know, related to Easter. And without further ado, let's strap in, Mike. We're going to time travel back in time to our second and third episodes, and then a couple episodes after that, to talk about the hero's journey and how that relates. That's true. We're going to see how this relates to the overall arc of our theology regarding Jesus Christ dying and rising from the dead.
We have the Master of Two Worlds, which there again, sorry to keep us moving along. This is not meant to be a three hour long podcast, or at least 3 hour episode. But
right.
We have Master of Two Worlds, which there again, this is something that shows the change in the hero but it's an essential part that he or she can't just be the master of this world where they conquered the bad guy, conquered the enemy. They have to be a master of home too. And so they have to have this kind of foot in both camps, which if we want to look at this theologically, like this is one of the fitting elements, not just the necessary elements, not just because the church says so or because the Bible proves it, but this is one of the fitting human elements of the two divine natures of Jesus, the human nature and the divine nature, because this shows his master of two worlds. This is why he can connect, Jesus can connect on that mythological level as much as he can on the historical level. Does that kind of, I know we haven't talked about that separately, Jacob, but you know, isn't that, I mean, I just think that's such a fascinating and important element when we start to look at.
No, it's a whole conversation to itself, right? But, you know, early church fathers, famously St. Irenaeus, have this concept of recapitulation. And the basic idea inherent to ancient Christianity as such is that Jesus had to embody all aspects of the human life. He had to journey through all aspects of humanity, if you will, up until death.
He had to be one born under the law, right? I mean, we can look at this both and element in pretty much every aspect of Jesus. But yeah, the master of two worlds, like this is so important, not just on a theological level, but on a human level. Like that's the whole point of this kind of podcast, is to connect the theology and the humanity, you know, which we both recognize is already there. It's not like that connection's ever been severed, but it's maybe been severed in the modern mind or severed in the mind that isn't ordered towards that.
Well, and I do think that, you know, our Christology is a little lacking nowadays, Mike. And so maybe one of the things that the conversations we have will be to continue to flesh out, no pun intended, the reality of what the incarnation was and how it is this quote unquote mythic reality for everybody that we all are living through, frankly. And that's some deep stuff to get into it.
And we're going to say this probably 5,000 times by the end of this podcast, but mythological is not the opposite of historical. It's not the opposite of real. It's not the opposite of truthful. Mythological is a subset of whatever is true. To say something is mythological is not to deny its, like I said, historicity, its veracity, any of those sorts of things.
Your church historian types or your adjunct theology professor types are going to talk about how St. Irenaeus is kind of the perfect example of early Christian thought regarding what Christ accomplished in his incarnation and, you know, the salvation that he brings to humanity. And the basic gist of that is that he recreates, he recapitulates in his person everything that has come already, and he basically undoes or redoes creation itself through his activity, and that's exemplified in his life, death, and resurrection.
And think about how, like, when you say he redoes, he relives, I mean, that's basically what Joseph Campbell was recognizing in the monomyth. Now, in the monomyth, he wasn't talking specifically about Jesus. He was saying that in all of these heroes, they are reliving some basic human story. Now, we just happen to recognize it. And again, this doesn't diminish the divinity of Jesus. This, in many ways, it upholds or glorifies the humanity of Jesus, which, as a historic Christian, you got to hold both of those.
Oh, some people think that it's some kind of like negative thing that the what Christ does is the ultimate example of every story ever made. And people will say, oh, that just means that it's not special, right?
It relativizes it.
Or it relativizes it, or it's just another story at that point, kind of thing. But I've never, I mean, I guess I can follow the logic of that argument, but I don't really buy it as a convincing argument. I think that if you believe that something's true, and if Jesus' story just didn't match the criteria of what's true to the human condition, to the lived experience, to what brings humans together, and speaks to the hearts of all people throughout all time. And if Jesus' story doesn't do that, then, you know, then that's unimpressive, right? Then Jesus found 20 bucks, right? You know, that's not a good story. Jesus' story is the best version of all stories. Spoiler alert, everybody, if you haven't seen these movies yet, it's been a long time, man, and they're like the best movies ever.
It's been like 10 years.
Yeah. You know, pause this podcast and go watch the Dark Knight trilogy. But you know, what I said last...
Almost as good as the Lego movie.
Almost. You know, I think I said last time, I guess I should have said spoiler alert last time too, but it's the only happy ending I've ever seen Batman get in any medium ever, depending upon how you want to define Batman's happiness, right? Some people might say his only happiness is like beating up bad guys, but... you know, if you take a more humanistic approach and believe that Batman's sense of satisfaction comes from peace and love and finding the things that we all want in our hearts, he gets that at the end of the Dark Knight trilogy after dying, you know. And then once he's gone through this kind of like ascesis, this lifetime of renouncement of all of his material goods, you know, he gives everything up at the end. He sacrifices himself at the end.
He wanted to be perfect, so he sold everything.
It's literally kind of how it plays out. You know, it's how it plays out.
The parable of the rich young man, isn't it?
Yeah. You know, then he kind of finds love with this other lost soul out there, Anne Hathaway's Catwoman character.
Oh my gosh, I just thought of, you know, the whole other motif in Batman is his mom's pearls, and I was like, she tries to steal them at the beginning, she's the pearl of great price.
What?
Oh, dang. My gosh. See, you thought you were getting cheesy. I can always stop it.
Yeah, we actually could probably do a whole lot about those pearls and that old great price analogy, but you know, he you know, I don't know how far I want to push it, but he finds peace. He finds peace after the life that he had led. And it's not a materialism. It's not a kind of, he doesn't go back to being rich. You know, we're not really given what his life looks like after his death. And that's probably appropriate for this analogy. But we know that he finds happiness. He finds happiness and he finds community and love. But it's only after he's purged of everything.
And, you know, what's actually, that makes me think, this is coming from that movie, it's called The Dark Knight Rises, right? And when you start to bring all this together, we're talking about this emptying, or even this lowering, right? This idea that he is removing from himself, and he's entering downwards and all that type of thing. That's where all this kenosis kind of implies. But the movie's title is rising, right? And so now we're getting into this idea, this Christian idea that to empty oneself is to elevate oneself.
Well, in the same way that Bruce Wayne had to, you know, in a sense, empty himself for the Batman to rise, it's almost like repeating that, but now it's the Batman emptying himself, or Gotham emptying itself of Batman, and then Gotham is the thing that rises. You know?
Well, yeah, and so that's interesting, because where I was going to go with this is, you know, at the end of the movie, he's with Catwoman, right? And, you know, we had just been talking about how, you know, the Pearl of Great Price stuff or whatever. This isn't exactly the perfect continuation of that thought. But again, you know, we like to stretch analogies. We've established that she is kind of the bride of the bat, right? I mean, and this has played out, you know, in certain iterations. Catwoman literally marries Bruce Wayne in other iterations, they come close, but they always have that kind of
will they
Sam
or won't
and Diane,
they? I was gonna
will
say Ross and Rachel. But...
Ross and Rachel, yeah, that's the generational difference.
So,
I was right gonna there.
Say, so would you would you actually call it a Bruce and Selena instead of a Ross and Rachel then?
Oh, you totally could. You totally could. But we all know at the end of the day, they end up together and live happily ever after, Mike. That's the appropriate end. But anyway, in the at least in The Dark Knight Rises, that is how it works out, right? And so you get this idea where, you know, I have no idea where this is going. I don't know if this is actually apropos, but what if Selena Kyle in this analogy is kind of like the bride of Christ, that now that Batman has emptied himself, now he is elevated into, let's say, happiness, right? Like, he's purged himself of everything, but he brings Catwoman with him. And Catwoman, that entire movie, is looking for the clean slate, right?
Yeah.
She's looking for the expulsion of her, expungement of her sins.
Oh, see, you know, she's the woman caught in adultery now. See, that's who Selena Kyle is.
But isn't that the church as well?
Yeah.
I mean, you know.
But there again, so, I don't think it's an either or. I think it's a both and, because that's, in a sense, you know, you think of, and again, it's maybe this is getting too cheesy or stretching it too far, but Gotham is kind of like the new Israel too. I mean, it's the new Jerusalem, or it's the Jerusalem in the Book of Revelation. And so it's not a is it Selena or Gotham? It just like it's not, you know, Mary or the church. It's Mary and the church, sort of thing.
And we're back. Jacob, I got a question for you.
What is it?
Have we fleshed out the recapitulation? That's my question after listening.
Kind of. You know, if you go... Oh, wait, was that just a joke to say fleshed out?
I'm just teasing you.
Yeah, okay,
you said,
I get yeah, it. Yeah.
You like you winked at the camera when you said it. I mean, unfortunately, we weren't video back then, but you basically winked at the camera when you
I know, it. Yeah. Well, you know, one of the things I liked about what we talked about in these clips was that... that point that I made, thank you very much, where I was like, you know, some people,
oh, I'm shocked.
I really like some of the things I said here, Mike.
Honestly, though, I did write down in my notes, I was like, it's gratifying to hear how smart I am. now that was said ironically. Well, maybe half ironically.
Only half ironically, right?
I'll be honest, it was the nicer version of what I originally thought, which was, it's gratifying to hear how much smarter I am than you, Jacob.
Oh, yeah, but I'm so much more witty and charming. So, I mean, who's the real winner? The fans.
The audience.
Fans are
that's,
the
those are the real
winner. Yeah. No, but like this idea that the idea that we find Christ all over the world in all these different stories and the repetition of themes that are true to the gospel is not a source of, you know, it's not, that doesn't make Christianity's belief pattern derivative. It makes it universal. Right. And so I just thought that was kind of neat.
Well, and I've been thinking, and obviously, like, this is basically what the whole show is, right? That's why we made these the first two episodes. And I keep reflecting more and more on this idea of intrinsic versus extrinsic when it comes to the relationship between, you know, non-Christian or quote unquote pagan kind of elements of myth, mythology, or just reality itself, and then the sort of Christian baptism of those things. Mm-hmm. And in the same way that, like, you know, something changes intrinsically in you when you're baptized, as opposed to just, you know, it's not the snow-covered dung heap, to quote
right.
a famous theologian.
Yeah, someone said that somewhere.
It's something, you know, like intrinsic. And so in the same way, when we're kind of looking for these elements, we don't want just sort of the tacked on, almost like hackneyed writing of, well, this is a Jesus person because this, this, and this, but more, where can we find it like organically coming from the thing itself?
Well, I think, yeah, that's the caricature is like what we're doing here is, you know, just pasting ideas on top of things that are, it's not native to, right? But I honestly, that is 100% not what I'm trying to do. What I'm trying to do, what I think was true is that you see the repetition of the gospel baked into the very like fabric of reality, the very fabric of storytelling, right? And so, you know, when we sit here and we you know, check out things that are not at all obviously like Christian in their actual text, but you still find these themes, you know, like if if we're not allowed to do that, and if we're not trying to do that, frankly, then we really should just be monks. And even the monks in the monasteries are still copying Homer, right? So like, even they're still doing it. But yeah, like, the idea is like, if our mission here is flawed, or we're just being silly, or we're just kind of like making stuff up, then like, then nothing that we experience in the world has any value.
It's ultimately like, it's not even just secular versus like sacred in terms of like the world versus the monks. It's more, it's actually non-Christian. Like like you can do it. A person can build up a sort of citadel mentality, but it's ultimately non-Christian. So like any person is free to do it, but it's just, it's contrary to the gospel. Mm-hmm. And obviously, both of us speaking from Christian standpoints, we don't want to do that.
No, it's true. And I don't think we need to. I think that we really do see Jesus everywhere, right? Like, he really is everywhere, folks. We're not making it up. All right. And so now we've covered recapitulation and the hero's journey a little bit. We're going to go into some further episodes that really get into the meat, flesh, if you will, of sacrifice and the atonement. Right, so we're going to get into some pretty heavy stuff. You ready? All right, everyone buckle in.
If anybody hasn't, but if you guys are listening to this episode, you've probably listened to our Batman one. I remember thinking as we were recording, I was like, this is going to make Jacob want to make this a Batman podcast, because that was definitely like, I was like, oh, wow, Jacob is the most interested he's ever been in. But anyway,
you know, for one, we weren't recording in the middle of the night, as is Mike's wont. Here's a little editor's note for everybody here. Those early episodes are so late at night, and I am not someone who stays awake late anymore. I'm old
man who yells and at those, cloud.
That's me. And I don't stay up late anymore. And so when I listen to those early episodes, it's like, man, I sound so tired.
This is just my
and you can tell by the second half of those episodes is when I finally kind of started to like wake up and kind of get in the conversation. So if you notice a little bit more vitality in my side of that conversation by the second half of those episodes, now you know. It's because that brutal taskmaster Mike was making this old man stay awake late at night past his bedtime.
This is just
in order to try to do these
one
episodes.
One of my many little things that I do to undermine, you know, your presence on the show. So yes, that I can be, I need to be everybody's favorite. We talked about recapitulation in the context of the hero's journey and of kind of typology. But one of the big areas where it comes up for Irenaeus and in atonement is in the Christus Victor theory of atonement, mm-hmm. where it's Christ now becomes, just like Adam was the representative of humanity, and even the name Adam means humanity. So it's almost like you've got the author of the story giving you a little bit of a hint in the name. But he becomes that representative, and he failed. But now Christ becomes the representative of the new humanity, and he succeeds. Mm-hmm. He's victorious. And so that's where...
But it's fundamentally humanity succeeding.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And that's the idea of the unity. That's the idea of the at-one-ment and the atonement, is that humanity has failed up to this point, but now humanity is going to succeed where it failed before, because God has entered humanity. And God's going to do for humanity, with humanity, in humanity, by humanity, what humanity is supposed to do.
Well, and this also goes back with, because actually when we were talking about recapitulation during the hero's journey, it led us into our conversation on theosis. And that's the whole idea between, you know, the two natures of Christ being fully God and fully man, but then also being this representative, because then we as humanity experience that theosis, right, taking on the divine nature in participation with the person of Christ. Obviously, it goes back to St. Paul, because St. Paul refers to Jesus as the new Adam. And so giving him that title is supposed to kind of point you as the reader to this relationship, right? This relationship as Adam as representative, Jesus as representative. The other one that, again, we get from ultimately St. Paul, but then we see fleshed out even in a lot of the early fathers, is called the ransom theory of atonement. he paid a debt he did not owe. I owed a debt I could not pay. Did you ever hear that growing up, or do you kind of remember that?
Oh yeah, no, definitely.
Yeah, I
You know, and ransom theory. So here's what I'll say. You know, coming from my Eastern background here, that the Christus Victor is kind of like the primary means that we really engage with atonement theory, so far as I can tell, so far as I'm familiar with. And then the other conversation pieces that float around it, like ransom theory and things like that, these are things that supplement and enlarge and speak to the idea that Christ has, you know, as we say in our Paschal hymn and our Easter hymns, of course, now I'm going to bring as soon as I... Christ has trampled down death by death, and upon those in the tombs bestowing life. That's the clarion call. Like that's the gospel. That's what we chant it incessantly during the Easter season. Once we get there, and it's a Christus Victor type, you know,
and
war cry.
You actually
almost.
So you actually touched on something that I wanted to point out too, which is that at least for these first three, so penal substitution, that would be the one that's sort of the one that has been largely rejected by, you know, again, historical Christianity, just because it's a distortion. But the other three, so the ransom theory, which we just talked about, Christus Victor,
right,
and then this last one called satisfaction, it's not that you pick one at the expense of the other two. It's that they all work together. It's like they're different facets of the same diamond. You know what I mean?
They are, yeah, and they... And they, so the ransom theory is where a lot of Protestantism can trace back to some more historical context and be like, oh, well, ransom theory, you know, or satisfaction theory, right? In fact, you can almost, you know, again, from my Eastern perspective, you can see the slow, steady walking off the cliff towards penal substitution as you go from Christus Victor to ransom to satisfaction to substitution. But to your point, and I mean, I think that ransom and satisfaction are perfectly acceptable because, A, ransom does capture this idea that Christ is an outsider. He's God. He's outside of creation. And he has to come into a place that's not native to him. He has to be something outside of creation that comes into creation to behave on behalf of creation.
He received a call to adventure.
That's true. Man, you're really bringing all the throwbacks to those episodes.
Oh, man, I love it. Yeah, hero's journey. Yeah, keep going, sorry.
But, you know, and so he's a ransom. Like, he's being brought in like a ransom, right? And there's a little bit of substitutionary ideas going on in that context. And then the satisfaction thing is the other half of the penal. So if ransom is where you get the substitution, then satisfaction is where you get the penal. Which I think is a distortion. You can totally speak to this, but I think that's why satisfaction becomes penal, because like it's, I'll even let you, I'll quit talking. So, you go ahead and explain satisfaction.
So, well, okay. And yeah, really quick, just to backtrack. So like you were kind of describing, you do see this sort of, and you wouldn't call it a development, obviously you'd call it a distortion like you did, but you sometimes see in some of those Old Testament examples, whether it's, you know, Isaac being substituted for the ram, or you have the Passover lamb, you know, in a sense, substituting for the firstborn when you have Moses and the Passover. That's on the surface what it looks like, except just taking the Moses example, if you look at the sacrifice at Sinai, which actually Catholics use in our liturgy for the Feast of Corpus Christi, for the Feast of the Body and Blood of Christ, they read that story, and it's not just that they sacrifice the lamb as a replacement for the people or a substitution. The blood of the lamb gets poured on the altar, but it gets sprinkled on the people. And so there's this unity between you and the sacrifice. It's not that the sacrifice replaces you. It's that you become part of that sacrifice, right? In this, you know, dramatized or symbolic way or whatever.
This is the thing about it is that we as modern people living in the West in America circa 2023 think sacrifice means giving something up, right? And while that plays a role in it in the sense that like you have to provide something for the meal, you know, that's not what sacrifice is. Sacrifice is not giving something up. Sacrifice is
communing with the gods. At the most fundamental level, it is a meal that's shared. And this comes into like ideas of hospitality that go like all the way back to like human origins. When you're sharing your meal with other people, you are you're at your most exposed, right? Like you're bringing people into your home. You have your defenses down. You're sharing a meal with each other. It's this very, very human act of hospitality. And this is doing that with the gods. Like you are communing with the gods by having a meal of which of your most precious stuff, right? So that's where the
that's why you pour out a libation, right? It's because it's not because you were losing the drink. It's because you were offering it to them because
the gods
you have
are
a drink together.
That drink. The gods are having that drink, right? And so what would happen, this is true of the Old Testament priesthood. This is true of any other pagan sacrifice. Even ones that don't involve fire, we can talk about those too. Most sacrifices had to do with like burning up the offering, right? And what would happen is the best meat, right? The best cuts would go to the gods because you offer your hospitality to your guest, right? And so you give them the best seat at the table and you give them the best food and all that stuff, right? And that gets thrown into a fire and it gets consumed by the fire and the smoke rises up into the heavens. And that is the gods, because the gods live in the heavens, eating the food, right? And then afterwards, everyone else eats the rest of the food. It's a big barbecue. That's what pagan sacrifices were, which makes the understanding of sacrifice on display in Cabin in the Woods such a clear product of Protestant Western culture, right? Like, which has completely over time, you know, for better or for worse, I know there's some classical Protestants that have a much better grasp of this, but a lot of Christianity that developed out of the centuries of Protestantism has completely lost sight of kind of what sacrifices are, right? No longer has the Eucharistic element in it. And sacrifice is just like giving up something. Sacrifice is just like, it's a kind of punishment. Like you're punishing the animal, right? We're going to kill an animal so we can punish it and it can take the sins upon.
It's bloodlust again, all over again.
There's
that's
no sense of communion.
Cabin in the Woods.
There's no sense of it being a barbecue meal where you're sharing hospitality with the gods. It's completely lost on like modernity in this kind of post-Protestant Christian West, right? And so that's the type of sacrifice you see in this movie is like they're just punishing victims.
Is you better do it or the world's going to end or we're going to destroy everything. And that's exactly what kind of brings us to...
Because the sin has to be punished, you know? The sin has to be punished.
Well, in our perennial obsession with telling Superman death stories in the last 40 years or whatever, right? Yeah. I think that in some sense it's like we're going back into our primal need for the resurrected God because we're living in this kind of liquid modernity, this kind of deconstructed, you know, unmythic world, right? The God is dead thing that Nietzsche ushered in, right? For, you know, Superman existed for 60 years and no one ever thought of killing him, right? But these innate archetypal tales, stories that live within us rise to the surface in when we need them, basically, right? They'll always come back out like they're reborn, actually, you know, to use that metaphor.
Well, we got we got sick of killing the real God because we turned away and ignored the real dying God in Jesus, and so we had to start recreating our own.
It's funny to see how Superman gets brought back to life in all these stories. It's always unconvincing, basically. But
well, yeah, it's
you got to bring
it
back.
It has, somehow. It's like arbitrary or whatever. It has to just kind of happens. Which maybe somebody could argue, oh, well, isn't the resurrection of Jesus just arbitrary because it's like a wish fulfillment thing? But
yeah, right. I mean, if you truly understand what's being told in the Christian story, it's an inevitability, right? Like, there's nothing, and that's what's so cohesive.
You got to snap your fingers when you do that, by the way.
Yeah, where's my big golden jeweled glove? You know, like it all makes sense, right? Whereas something like Superman being brought back to the dead is, again, it's just another shadow of that. And as such, it's not as good, ultimately, narratively, cohesively speaking. Well, but it's iconic for sure.
And going back to why it has to be Superman that dies, well, it might be significant that, you know, Batman or Flash or Wonder Woman dies. It has to be Superman in order to fit into this, because it's just like going back to these ancient communities where it's like you want to find a natural explanation of, oh, yeah, the seasons change. They, you know, winter kills everything and then it all comes back in the spring or whatever. Is it has to be the life giver. So the life giver for the community, which for the Egyptians was the Nile. And so it has to be the death of God.
And there's something, you know, to your point, like, because what you said was that, like, you gotta kill the life giver, right? Which I do think is very mythic. That's totally true. When we talk about Superman, it's understood. He is the most godlike superhero character. He's also the most archetypal superhero character, as in he's the first and ultimately the source of superheroes as such.
So I believe this is my shameless plug for probably my favorite episode, the Cabin in the Woods episode. I think it's actually mutual. I think it's both of us in terms of recording it.
I really enjoyed that episode too. Yeah, for sure.
I enjoyed doing it. I enjoyed the content, obviously, like much more than, well, I'll just say much more than some of the other movies you've made me watch. But you could say the same for me. Some of the movie or TV shows that I've made you watch. Or I would say gently invited you to watch. But we can both agree, yeah, Cabin in the Woods was,
it's a fun ride.
And
honestly,
as it ties into Sacrifice, like you said, sorry to derail, but yeah, as it ties into Sacrifice.
No, it's true. You know, the previous clips prior to that were the Gerard scapegoat episodes, right? And I got to tell you, so as I was like looking through clips and like finding stuff, my wife was in the room at one point, and it was during these Gerard clips that I was looking through and things like that. And the first thing she does is at some point you say, Jesus received a call to adventure. And my wife is like, did he just say Jesus received a call to adventure? And she rolled her eyes real hard, Mike. So she was being a hater. She was being a hater to that.
What?
I know. But you're probably used to that, right? I mean,
I don't know. I get it.
I just thought it cracked me up that her response was like that.
She's not a Joseph Campbell monomyth.
Well, hey, if you want to know the quality,
or she's just sick and tired of everybody referring to the Joseph Campbell monomyth, which I guess I can appreciate.
If you want to know the quality of my wife's commentary, you shouldn't take this too personal, because if you want to know the quality of my wife's commentary, the other thing she did,
you're gonna get in trouble.
was fall into
Why are
some...
you doing this season?
Oh, she'll never listen to this.
Jacob, nobody can see this, but you're sitting on a tree and you're sawing
the
branch.
Yeah, I'm sawing the branch. Yeah, exactly. No, this is the quality of my wife's commentary, is that she fell into a fit of giggles because we basically said penal satisfaction like 5 times in a row while we were talking about the satisfaction theory stuff. She got to giggling about it. And I was like, grow up, babe.
But you, dear listener, are much more refined
That's true.
Than Jacob's spouse.
That's true. Let's see here. The other thing, then we got into the Cabin in the Woods stuff, which I do think, you know, honestly, if we as a society bring back a comprehensive knowledge of what sacrifice is supposed to mean, as far as like a communal offering, a communal gift, a communal, you know, kind of barbecue like meal together, you know. Instead of just like sacrifice, like, oh, I'm just like giving up something that I can't have anymore, this kind of punitive experience, I think that people's theology would really like grow, right? Because it's such a different vibe if you think the word sacrifice just means I'm killing something instead of I'm going to share
a meal. And this is the result of separating, because again, from the language that we, and not that in Eastern Orthodoxy you would like fight against this, but we use the language of the Paschal mystery. And the whole idea behind that is that it ties all of the events from the Last Supper all the way to the resurrection together as one big thing. And so we don't separate, and again, I say we, you as well, like you don't separate the meal from the cross. Mm-hmm. You don't separate the Last Supper from the cross. It's all one big sacrifice. And I would even argue, and this is a separate conversation, but you could tie in the ascension with that. That's part of the Paschal mystery, is tying in the ascension, right? Because that's when you would burn up the rest of the lamb, and it would rise up to God, just like Jesus rises up to God you know, 40 days after. So like the whole idea behind the Paschal mystery, and we say this at the liturgy, is we call it the mystery of faith, that all of these things, even though they take place over the course of, you know, multiple days, is seen as one big event. And so we've always been about uniting all of them and not separating them.
Sure, sure. All right, we're going to go into the next clips, which is going to be the final set of clips. It's going to be about the actual descent into Hades and the actual resurrection of Christ. And so here we go.
Not only is it present in the Christian story, and it has a lot of Christian theological consequences, but as we kind of talked about in our first, one of our first conversations about the hero's journey, this provides sort of like the human foundation, the human basis for the Gospels themselves. And so the this is just one aspect of it. So when we're talking about Joseph Campbell and the hero's journey, talking about the departure, the initiation, and then the return, and how all of those are fulfilled in Jesus, this is just one of those more specific elements. Do you remember what it's called in the, or what Campbell calls it in his hero's journey?
Well, just
it's got a biblical connotation.
And the descent into the underworld? I mean, what
is it? Well, it's swallowed by the whale. Or belly of the whale.
Okay.
Belly of the whale.
Okay, sure.
Which again, as we both recognize, it not only preceded Jesus in ancient pagan mythology, but even in the Old Testament, we have, and Jesus himself makes this connection, right, between him and Jonah. He calls his resurrection the sign of Jonah.
Hey, wait a second. You know, I think Voyage Comics might just have a comic talks about this subject. Maybe our corporate overlords would appreciate us pushing a little Voyage Comics.
So sales. Voyage has that. Yeah, they have an edition of Jonah.
Jonah's Voyage to Atlantis, and it's the best thing I've ever read, kids. Go get your parents to go buy you 12 copies.
You think kids
hand it out to your
need
friends.
To ask their parents' permission are listening?
And parents, if you're listening to this, grandparents, this makes a great Easter gift for
children
and all of your children's friends.
As we'll talk about this, the trip to the underworld or swallowed by the whale, it not only has Jesus connotations, but because it has Jesus associations, it has baptism associations, right? You going under the water for the baptism or the submersion. And
do I
so
need
actually,
to get the outline up in front of me? Because you are hopping all over the place. Can't we just sit with the Jonah thing for
a little
bit.
What I was trying to do was I was trying to tell you that I actually did get it as a gift for my one of my kids' godparents when he was baptized. And the godparents, they have kids of their own. So I was like, oh, this is kind of a cool, you know, baptism gift, not just for the family of the kid being baptized, but for the godparents as well, because then you kind of just, it kind of connects them in a little bit more fun and unique way to the whole experience.
Well,
so,
you know, okay. So all joking aside, well, maybe not all joking aside, but a lot of it, it's a pretty fun story, like interpretation that they give,
yeah,
because they bring in the Atlantis myth to it and things like that. I'm a sucker for the kind of cross-pollination of these types of old stories and things like that. So
yeah.
I appreciated what they were doing. And here's something that I'll bring up that may or may not. I bet you this isn't on your outline. If you look at the cover to that Jonas comic, when you see the Atlantis in the background, it actually kind of looks vaguely sci-fi looking. And in the comic itself, you don't end up seeing a lot of sci-fi architecture when they get down to Atlantis. But that put in my own mind the idea that the underworld or Atlantis could be like this kind of like where everything ends up, right? Like it's like a repository of like history. And then that got me thinking about Loki, the TV show, where they end up at the end of time at, you know, some point in that story. And at the end of time, it's just all the leftovers. It's all the leftovers of history, right?
Well, and again, to push this even further.
Underworld motif. So
to push this even further, what's the other baptism connection when it comes to Atlantis? Is what's the story behind Atlantis? Is that it had a sort of catastrophic flood that brought it under, just like Numenor as well, right? In the Silmarillion, absolutely. Lord of the Rings series. And so you have this Atlantis catastrophic flood, which has another biblical connection to baptism as well, because what is used by the church fathers as a type for baptism was the flood story. And so, Yeah, having Atlantis and Jonah, you have the Christ dies and resurrects kind of parallel. You have the flooded city, flooded world parallel, which all goes around, which all correlates to baptism too.
It's a heck of a coincidence, Mike. Let me tell you.
If you want to, and actually you brought up Loki, another even more recent example. We've already talked a little bit about the baptism imagery in The Mandalorian. You have the destroyed world or almost sunken world of Mandalore and the mines of Mandalore, which is where Din Djarin has to, there's a redemptive element, right? He has to wash in the pools in the mines of Mandalore. And so you have this entering into, and as we'll see, he meets a monster in that underworld, right? In the waters.
Yeah,
of
there's a giant monster in the deep. Yeah. That's it's the Mythosaur, by the way.
Oh my gosh.
The Mythosaur.
I know. A little on the snout, I think, is what I say.
Yeah, a little on the snout, exactly. So clearly they are doing some really heavy symbolic lifting in Mandalorian season 3 when it comes to
baptism. We're here for it. I mean, we're
the entire
all
planet.
That, so.
I mean,
and
we're just
again,
racing
friend of the
these
show,
topics. I mean,
again,
that's our episode
of the show,
about
John Favreau.
There's our episode about Underworld, folks. Thanks. See you next time.
Well, you know, we both said we had a lot of content, so now we just have to, very quickly, like squirrels. Like squirrels, one thing to the next. No, like
what
I said, when,
say about Favreau?
When friend of the show John Favreau finally comes on, right? Uh-huh. He can be like, oh yeah, you know, I was so inspired in anticipation of all that you guys were going to talk about that I had to include all that baptism underworld imagery. Right?
At this point, I hope that the Lord of Spirits people never listen to this podcast because we've ripped off friend of the show so frequently and so thoroughly that I'm a little embarrassed at this point. But you know what? I'm going to keep doing it because it's endlessly fun. It is endlessly entertaining to refer to other people as a friend of our show.
As people whose clout is so far exceeds ours that
indeed.
Someday.
Yeah.
That this is our vision board.
You know, I'm sorry, fathers.
I'm also getting a note from our producer. We can stop with the commercial. He's had enough of it, so we're gonna keep moving on to.
Oh gosh.
Yeah.
Oh,
enough about Voyage products. So really quickly.
I brought up the comic, but we got to keep talking about all the symbolism in Mandalorian.
Yeah, no.
Well, maybe we'll hold on to it for the season 3 recap, but
yeah, we're going to do like a season finale, season 3 recap when it all finishes up. But so far, I mean, how many episodes have dropped so far? Like 3 or 4,
yeah,
I think.
We gotta wait,
They've already very, very heavily dropped into the baptism imagery that we both anticipated because they kind of tease it in the Book of Boba Fett when Din Djarin shows up too.
I just gotta say I'm just surprised that our producer told us to quit peddling his schlock, because I swear before this episode he was like whining in my ear. He's like, please, 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 please talk more about our comics in this show. And I was like, all right. I mean, I thought that we weren't, you know, kind of corporate sellouts like that, but if you insist. If you insist, Voyage Comics.
The soul of an artist, I think, is the last line. So
I just made
backing
all that
up a little
I'm just
bit.
Kidding.
Hey, come on, don't pull him behind the veil like that. even when Superman dies, he doesn't really die, and that's the and that's one of the things too. Is like as much as we want to recreate these myths, we still can't quite go that full. Like we can't go a full 100% on it, you know. And maybe I'm opening up too much. Maybe I'm opening up a can of worms or whatever too late in the, but I'm just thinking like, that's one of the things that really stuck with me when I watched Death of Superman and then started watching Reign of Superman is like, or like you were saying in the comic too, is even when he's dead, he's not really dead. And I'm not dismissing the importance of like the death of the icon and how significant that was in the storyline. But it's just funny how like, we still can't grapple with the actual, like we still can't grapple with actual death in our heroes, in our gods, right? And yet that's what makes Christianity different is, no, we didn't just pretend. Not only do we not pretend that Jesus rose, but we can't even pretend that Jesus didn't die. Like we have to go full 100 all the way through. He actually died, he was actually dead, and he actually rose. And, you know, all the other stuff too, of course.
That's super important that we, like, kind of, like, leave that final note for this conversation, is that we've been talking a lot about this dying, resurrecting God idea, but none of it, I mean, like, Jesus really does die.
It's all just shadows compared to the reality.
It is. It's just intimations, and that's the word of this podcast, intimations. I've used it like 3 times now. But like, and yet, this is what makes Christianity truly great, right? You know, one of the things, folks, that you can be proud of if you're a Christian, and you can hopefully be intrigued by if you're not, is that not only is our religion cool, which it is, but it's profound in how it has the best of all things.
And it doesn't escape. It's not escapism as much as even somebody like Nietzsche or Schopenhauer or all those other, you know, salty atheists might say. Like, it's not escapism. It enters into the pain and the death.
The death of Superman feels cheap because you know they're going to bring him back, right? The death of Jesus doesn't feel cheap, because him coming back is A, the point, and like, it's all like, none of it is, it is all part of the plan, right? Whereas when you bring Superman back, you're basically just undoing a decision you made previously, because, you know, commerce ultimately.
We all roll our eyes at the retcon. We all roll our eyes,
right? Whereas the narrative structure of Jesus, it has way more to do, frankly, even though we did the whole descent into Hades thing, we kind of leaned more on like the stories of like humans going into the underworld and things like that. But if anything, if there's a better correlation, it is the fertility seasonal gods, because at least there you're talking about it being this kind of cosmic story that
the grain of wheat has to fall to the earth and die.
All right. You know, I did choose all these clips because throughout the show, they all kind of like reference other clips, like other episodes we've done too. So, see, that was strategic on my part. Now I've whetted everyone's appetites to go back and listen to.
We're like
to
one of those, we're like the Strong's Concordance of podcasts.
Yes.
podcasts. That's a deep theology cut, by the way, too. Yeah. The Strong's Concordance. We're just referencing back and forth over and over.
I've used Strong's Concordance in my time, sir.
I was about to say, handy. I actually don't even, I sometimes assume it's maybe like a deeper cut than it is, but I don't know how familiar, Strong's Concordance.
I can't imagine many, I don't know. Like, I was evangelical for a while, and so within that community, that heavy emphasis on Bible study, I think maybe Strong's is more common.
It was at my evangelical undergrad college where I first, got to dive deep into it.
Good job, evangelicals. We will give you props for your.
Okay, that was
thorough...
Jacob, by the way. That was Jacob. That was not. I'm not as.
I have many, many beloved family members who are evangelical. They are better Christians than me. So, good job. You know, this is it. This is the. We've reached the end of our clip show. Do you have any final thoughts you want to give on the importance of the Easter holiday and the resurrection of Christ? Because that is ultimately why we did this, folks, to go back. We didn't have time to record because of celebrating the Paschal mystery. And then we did a clip show trying to draw out information about it. So
where Jacob ends up having to devote more time.
It was an insane
normal
episode. It was a very silly idea in hindsight.
So you can send your gratitude emails to Jacob this time. Even though I know everybody assumes it's me who does all the work. But nope, it was actually Jacob.
Which is why we're not going to do a clip show like ever again, by the way. So I hope you guys enjoyed this, because it's probably the last one.
It's going to be it's going to be like our most popular. And then everyone's going to be like, Jacob, do it.
They're
give it the
shows.
People, give the people what they want. No, I would just say, like you said, closing thoughts on Easter. I go back to, you know, what I was saying about unity and integration. You know, I keep thinking about the one line in John chapter 12 where he says, when I'm raised up, I'll bring all. In some translations, it's all men, but in some you'll find all things. I think the Douay Rheims is, I'll bring all things to myself.
Mm-hmm.
And in a sense, that's what's funny is he just talks about the grain of wheat falling to the earth and dying. And we're talking about seeds of the word and how these seeds are planted in, you know, not necessarily the best of soil, but it can still grow up into, you know, assuming that God's grace is there, I guess, to keep the metaphor, the rain is giving life to it. And so there's this potential to bring someone into a closer relationship with Christ. And, you know, we've also talked in previous conversations about, you know, this was what brought C.S. Lewis into Christianity. Mm-hmm. Is he saw the seeds of the Jesus, of the Christian resurrection, in a lot of this myth. And, you know, it was his conversations with J.R.R. Tolkien who helped him develop this view of reality. And so the same thing when it comes to, you know, how we look at these different stories, the ones that we've talked about, whether that we've used in this clip show or what we'll continue to talk about, or even in episodes that we haven't really gone back to, is it's all about, you know, this integration. And the same thing when it comes to, like I was talking about with the Paschal Mystery, you know, the reason why we see all of those things brought together as one, right? The Thursday, the Friday, the Saturday, and the Sunday. We include Holy Saturday, where he goes into the harrowing of hell, the place of the dead, because that's what is the basis for why we can connect 2,000 years later to that one event on the cross. Mm. It's because we've already connected them all together, right? This is something that happened outside of time. And so when we recognize these eternal realities in these kind of temporal examples, like this Superman story or this horror movie or whatever we happen to find it in, that's, you know, that's what ultimately brings us back to the cross, brings us back to Christ.
You know, honestly, this last week, our metropolitan in the Antiochian Orthodox Church, that's the church that I belong to, that's like the Pope of our jurisdiction.
Okay, well, careful, but that's... that's
right. Fair enough. Or maybe careful. The Pope is the Metropolitan of the Catholic Church, is what I should say.
Just push through.
Yeah,
just
the Metropolitan, through. Though, he actually really... You'll like this. The only reason I know about this is because some other Orthodox friends of mine sent it to me to complain about how he was being ecumenical. So... That probably means that you'll like it, Mike. But basically he was like, you know, right now the Western churches are celebrating Easter, are celebrating the resurrection of Christ. And I just want everyone to understand that we are all celebrating the resurrection of Christ. Whatever date you celebrate it on, it's the same celebration. Whatever date you celebrate it on, It's all of Christianity. You know, it's the content of the celebration. It's not necessarily the calendar event. Now, there are some people, like, there's lots of theological reasons to care about dates and things like that. I'm not actually trying to minimize that. I'm only trying to draw attention to what Metropolitan Saba was trying to say, is that the content of the resurrection is ever present. And the days that we choose to celebrate, it's not like the resurrection wasn't occurring the other 364 days of the year, right? Like, in other words, I think what he's trying to say and what I agree with him with is that the resurrection is ever present. It's ever with us. And when we celebrate it, whatever day that happens to be, it's a reminder and a reason to think about it in a way that's more profound than we're typically giving attention to it, perhaps, but it is not to say that it's not important every other day of the year, because it is. All things have been drawn across space and time, right? All things have been drawn into Christ with his resurrection. So every moment of this life, every story of this life, every personal journey of this life has been drawn to Christ. So...
It sounds like he was ripping off of Pope John Paul II when he said, "We are an Easter people, and Alleluia is our song." He actually said that, many years ago now, 1986, I think. Just teasing, of course, but mm-hmm. it's the same idea,
yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
This idea that, yeah, we're people of the resurrection. And that's, I mean, yeah, we celebrate it for a specific time because we've sanctified the calendar. We've sanctified Kronos, to reference another episode we didn't talk about.
There you go.
But we've sanctified Kronos. Kairos has entered into it. And that's what the incarnation was, right? Like you said, Jesus' whole life is redemptive, even though we might focus on these particular days. And so the, you know, that's why even ordinary time is not just ordinary, so to speak. And so, yeah, we, you know, you kind of take Easter with you, just like when you receive the Eucharist, you're supposed to take the Eucharist with you outside of Mass.
Yeah, absolutely.
Or outside of the liturgy.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, in the spirit of such things, Christ is risen, Mike.
He is risen indeed.
Thanks for listening to Voyage Podcast. The Voyage Podcast is a production of Voyage Comics and Publishing, which seeks to create exceptional entertainment informed by Catholic values that inspire people to live a heroic life. Voyage Comics seeks to advance truth and beauty found in powerful stories. To learn more, visit voyagecomics.com. You can also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.